Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
As the scripture says, I planted the seed and Apollos watered it. But God kept growing. God kept it growing.
Is there something or someone that keeps you humble in your life?
The Lord, you know, I give him all his praise, the glory, the honor, you know, because without him, like, it's crazy. You know, I be thinking about it, talking to him throughout the day, like, man, appreciate you, you know, I thank you. We just got to keep it going and let the Lord know he's number one.
That's actor Chadwick Boseman and NFL quarterback Lamar Jackson talking about their faith. Boseman, of course, in the news in his recent passing and in conjunction with baseball celebration of one of his roles, famous number 42. And of course, the NFL season is starting up and Lamar Jackson is not just a rising star. He's kind of a galaxy in and of himself, talking about his faith rather freely. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, September the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly will be our guest for the first half hour or so. We're going to talk about media coverage of actor Chadwick Boseman and NFL quarterback Lamar Jackson. Then Pastor Will Whedon joins us for the continuation of our series, The Words of Scripture Today, the word light in the New Testament. Joining us to talk about media coverage of actor Chadwick Boseman and NFL quarterback Lamar Jackson, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
One of these, a rising star in Hollywood and recently deceased. The other man, probably a man with the rest of his career ahead of him in terms of being quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens. What ties these two men and their stories together?
Well, it may not be the most obvious word, but let me start with something I learned long ago when I was studying advertising and mass media in grad school. And then I kept reading about this because I got so intrigued with it. And there are a lot of media theorists who think that the single most important factor in mass media popularity, celebrity, and impact on the nation is a characteristic that they simply call cool. Some people are cool, and some people are, in media terms, not cool. The not cool people are not the people that you want to be like. The not cool people may be stupid, or they may be cruel, or they may just dress wrong, but they certainly are not the people who are to be held up as examples of what it means to be a success. There's a whole school in advertising that the whole point of advertisement shows you what you are not. It shows you what you don't have or what you don't look like or what you don't weigh or how your hair doesn't look. It shows you what you're supposed to aspire to. And in many ways, this theory says the whole purpose of mass media is to tell you how to improve and change your life. And the power to determine who is cool and who is not cool is one of the most powerful roles the media plays in American life. As it's been said many times, the media does a very lousy job of telling you what to think, but it does a great job of telling you what to think about. And this is one of the things that happens with celebrity and why celebrities are so important in the American mind and how we even picture the world. Okay, let's put it this way. Whenever there is an opening for the Democrats needing a presidential candidate, and especially if they can't seem to find any unity on any one person. A certain media figure always gets brought up as what would happen if fill in the blanks decided to run for president. Now, who would you put in that blank?
Well, I mean, currently, I would say...
No, I'd say over the last 20 years.
Oh, okay. I would say candidates that I've heard are Oprah Winfrey, more lately Michelle Obama, George Clooney. Usually it's the glitterati of either Washington or Hollywood.
Yeah, it's Oprah is the connecting thread. I think Michelle Obama, in many ways, besides her obvious success in life and being first lady and a glamorous, glorious first lady, brilliant first lady as well, she's also really, really good friends with Oprah. And Oprah's endorsement of the Obamas was a critical factor in taking someone who had just reached the U.S. Senate and helping him defeat Hillary Clinton and defeat other very well-connected legacy Democratic politicians. And then, boom, Barack Obama was everywhere. And what was, if you were going to pick a word to describe Barack Obama in his ascendancy, it would be hard to pick a word more powerful than cool. So what made me think about this was the other day I was reading a massive, excellent Sports Illustrated piece about Lamar Jackson. Now, confession here, everybody, I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I moved to Oak Ridge, Tennessee 5 years ago from Baltimore and had lived in the Baltimore area before. I'm a Ravens fan. So I immediately was intrigued with this Lamar Jackson guy when he was selected. And over, of course, you have the whole image which dominates the article, which is the black quarterback, and specifically the black quarterback who has spent his life trying to get white people to let him play quarterback because he's the best athlete on the team. He's like the fastest athlete on the team. He's extraordinarily gifted, so he ought to play wide receiver, right? And you have this tremendous Jackson line that runs through a lot of his press conferences early last year when he's throwing 5 touchdown passes and all that. And he says with this little wry smile, not bad for a running back. And that's him saying, you told me I couldn't do it. So there's this pride that goes with him. But at the same time, you over and over heard the leadership of the Baltimore Ravens stress, this young man is humble. This young man sees his duty to serve others. This young man is a born leader. This man can unite our team. Now, this intrigued me because since I follow the Ravens so carefully as a fan, but also as a religion writer, the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, John Harbaugh, is a very outspoken Christian and has created a culture in which a lot of different kinds of people have been able to help lead his team. But unlike some other franchises, currently the franchise that shall not be named in nearby Washington, D.C., that's a team that has a reputation for having an owner that isn't comfortable with a lot of different kinds of leaders and all that. And I bring that up because I'm also a Baylor alum, and I was a fan of RG3. And when RG3, Robert Griffin III, Heisman Trophy winner from Baylor, was at the team that shall not be named in Washington, D.C., I tried several times to write columns about Robert Griffin III's very strong Christian faith. And whenever you tried to go through the structures of the Washington team that shall not be named, you heard over and over, I'm not sure that's something the team wants him to talk about. I'm not sure that's something he can talk about. And so we had things like Robert Griffin went church shopping, trying to find a church to really plug into in the D.C. area, all of which got no attention whatsoever, except a story by one of my former students who had landed an interview with him for other purposes and then popped the church question. And Griffin lit up and started talking about it. So why do I bring this up? I think there's a very good chance that one of the things that helped the Ravens bond with Lamar Jackson and decide we're building our entire team around this young man, even if it means completely restructuring our offensive line, our receivers, our running backs, we're building our team around this guy for the next decade plus. He's our leader. And what's his slogan? Big Trust, spell T-R-U-Z-Z, to get around a copyright with T-R-U-S-S, which is what it was. Well, Big Trust what? Well, it's kind of Big Trust me, Big Trust each other, Big Trust teamwork, Big Trust sacrifice, and all of these other personalities. So in the Sports Illustrated cover story, fine story, great details about his athletic abilities and past, there's a fascinating moment when it turns out that when Lamar Jackson went from high school to college, he changed his number from 7 to 8, and he has stuck with 8 ever since. And what was the 7 all about? It was a part of a program to help young black athletes and others achieve their best abilities, and it was built on, ready for this? God, prayer, faith, family, education, sacrifice, character, and discipline. And when he changed from 7 to 8, why did he do it? The Bible's teaching that the 8th day of creation represents a new beginning. He was going off to college now. He was no longer in high school. He changed his number from 7 to 8. It was a new beginning, a new day, a new gift from God. The 8th value became a renewed emphasis on faith. Okay, this gets 2 paragraphs out of this massive, almost book chapter length feature. And it struck me that the number that a young man chooses to wear on his back is not an insignificant thing in sports, especially if he requested the number and he had a reason. Why is this the first time in a major profile of this young man that I've looked at carefully? Why was this the first time that I heard a block of explicit Christian content connected to him in a major national level news story? And why did they bury it like 2,000 to 3,000 words into this story, and it never comes up again, when the whole point of the article is what makes this man unique? What's the factor that connects him? I'm not sure that Christianity, evangelical Christianity, even black evangelical Christianity, I'm not sure that it's cool right now, if you get my drift here. And I wonder, I mean, I've paid pretty close attention to Jackson. I've heard little bits of God language here and there, and that's very common with black athletes that have grown up in black churches. But when you start seeing an articulated perspective, I had never seen the clip from a press conference where they ask him, what makes you so humble? And he just hauls off and says, the Lord. I mean, the Lord is what this is all about. I give him all thanks and praise. That's very common God language from a lot of athletes. But it made me wonder, why aren't we learning more about Jackson's faith if it is a key element of what defines him as a man and as an athlete, and most importantly, as a leader, which is what a quarterback is? Now, that was a long answer to your question, and we didn't even get to Chadwick Boseman. Does that give you a clue as to why I'm intrigued with this?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of actor Chadwick Boseman and NFL quarterback Lamar Jackson. We'll talk a little bit about Boseman on the other side of the break and why that Sports Illustrated story on Lamar Jackson only gave 2 short paragraphs on what seemed to be a pretty big factor in his life.
With the growth of the evangelical mega churches, especially of the seeker-driven and purpose-driven type, we've had an entire generation of kids who have never experienced any kind of meaningful form of catechesis or even basic biblical instruction.
Pastor Chris Roseborough speaking at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
As a result of this, they have never been exposed to what the Bible teaches regarding the one true God who exists in three eternal persons. The reason why the doctrine of the Trinity exists is because this is exactly what God has revealed about himself.
You can watch and listen to Chris Roseborough's presentation, Making the Case for the Trinity, and all of the teachings from this year's conference for a tax-deductible donation of $250. It's available via on-demand video streaming or podcast. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Wednesday afternoon, September the 2nd, we're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of actor Chadwick Boseman and NFL quarterback Lamar Jackson. Terry is senior fellow at the Overbee Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, real briefly, staying with Lamar Jackson, why do you think it is, and here's the theory that I work with, this number eight, eighth day of creation, new creation theme, got so little space. Are sports journalists as irreligious, a-religious, as news journalists?
Well, they may or may not be. I've never studied that, and I honestly don't know. But I will say this. The publicity people that surround sports teams, they have a high value on preventing controversy. They don't like hot topics. Now, and I guess now, unless that's social justice and race and whatever else. But a lot of athletes are told to avoid things that they feel would divide the fan base. And in my experience, at the top of that list is religion. It's like the NFL's policy for years that the networks that cover NFL games no longer have any images at the end of the game of the prayer circle in the field or middle of the field or off to the side, where people from both teams, men from both teams, get together to pray. That was deemed to be too controversial, or aren't these guys supposed to hate each other? Aren't these gladiators? They're not comfortable with religion at all. And at the Ravens kind of have blown the top off that, you know, because of the Hall of Fame level guys. God's linebacker, of course, Lewis, leaps to mind, that have kind of blown that door open. And so it'll be interesting to see if we learn more about this. But if you ever watch the speeches at the end of games in the locker room by Harbaugh and by other people, or from the team's chaplain, they always have a very outspoken chaplain, you'll see that there is a lot of God talk around the Ravens. So I'm not going to be at all surprised if this becomes frequently over the years something that we learn about Lamar Jackson and that sticks. But right now, I mean, he's just too cool to be a church guy, right? And at the moment, I'm really curious. Is he still active in a church? Has he found a church? Is he active in any local ministries other than the normal ministries that athletes frequently do with food and clothing and outreach to the community? And there are lots of stories about Lamar Jackson's ability to bond with the African-American community in Baltimore, a very troubled city. But once again, that would bring him in contact with the black church. So I've got lots of questions. My answer to your question is I think sports teams are not comfortable with this. And by the way, I think Hollywood studios are not very comfortable with it. Also, if you were going to pick someone over the last generation or so of Hollywood, name a character more cool than Denzel Washington. Name a man who has more cool factor than Denzel. I can't come up with many names. He's like the definition of that characteristic. Yet this is a preacher's son who, as he's gone further into his career, has become much more open in speaking about his faith and in making that more of a part of his identity, including in some commencement addresses and other public places where the cameras are on him and he gets to say what he wants to say. And one of the young disciples of Denzel literally paid for Chadwick Boseman's ability to go to Oxford in England and study acting. And was kind of a hero and mentor to him is Chadwick Boseman. And in the last decade or so, there's nobody in Hollywood whose cool factor outshone Chadwick Boseman, especially once he became T'Challa, and he became the figure, the king, quite literally, the king of the coolest and most important piece of African-American pop culture to come out of a major Hollywood studio ever. So this brings us to the idea, or the question, why are we only now, after his death, beginning to see stories that really go in depth on his faith? Did you know much about his faith, or had you seen evidence of that before?
No, but when I heard, of course, on his passing, that he had been struggling with a stage 3, then stage 4 cancer over the last about 5 years or so, he had not spoken publicly about it. My first thought was, nobody goes through that without getting religion.
Well, nobody goes through that without a support system and without people who help him. And he clearly made some decisions about his own dignity and not wanting to lose certain roles because if they won. I mean, he played T'Challa in Avengers movies and in the Black Panther while in chemotherapy. Can you imagine the discipline and the pain required in that? So then I was so fascinated when he gets up 2 years ago at Howard, his alma mater, you know, and is, once again, the camera's aimed at him, and he's got the mic, and nobody can take it away from him. And he did this lengthy speech, and if you watch that YouTube video, watch his eyes. I don't ever see them go down. I think he's famous for his ability to learn new scripts and complicated scripts on, you know, a day's notice. I don't ever see his eyes go down. There might be some way he's reading off teleprompters. It's a long speech, and it builds and it builds and it builds to a series of biblical quotations and references that are not standard God talk. This is not just, trust the Lord, things will be okay. This is, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has made it grow. I mean, okay, 1 Corinthians, I mean, that's not low-grade God language. You know what I'm saying? And there have been some pieces in the last couple of days, one in a Christian publication, that have pointed out his other very articulate use of biblical language. And this is just really curious. And then we find out that he was very active in church. He did grow up in the black church. He was a youth leader. He had done lots of speaking. This was a part of who he was. There was a piece run by Religion News Service, a fantastic piece. Yet I laughed out loud when I read this sentence. Near the end of the Howard speech, drawing perhaps from his black church upbringing, Bozeman's cadence turned melodic. Sometimes you need to feel the pain and sting of defeat to activate the real passion and purpose that God predestined inside of you, says Bozeman. God says in Jeremiah, I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. That's the thesis statement of that whole climactic section of this speech at his alma mater. And he's standing up there 2 years before his death. In the midst of that, he looks noticeably thinner in that picture. There are two fantastic pieces on this at Religion News Service that have just come out, and I hope everybody can read them. But why do we just learn this now? I'd like to know more about the role his faith played in his life. Denzel Washington is an active church member, has talked openly about how it's affected his family, his marriage, the roles he chooses, and how he defines the roles he chooses. You can see evidence of that in the roles that Chadwick Boseman played, including Jackie Robinson, another iconic figure, and faith is a critical element of his story as well. Why now? I mean, would it have been uncool to have presented that part of this man's life as a part of his public image? You know, I'm just asking.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, we continue our series on the words of Scripture today, light in the New Testament. Is there a difference between how light is presented in the Old Testament and the New? And what do we discover about that light when Jesus says, I am the light of the world and you are the light of the world? We'll be right back. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
Solid, serious, substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Ars Moriendi, the art of dying well. If death is the punishment for sin, then how does one die well? Well, that's the question we ask and answer in the September issue of The Lutheran Witness. We ask and answer the most common questions, fears, and doubts faced by Lutherans and Christians as they approach death. To subscribe, visit cph.org/witness. cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Ad Crucem is proud to support Christian education for students of all ages. We offer posters of the Lord's Prayer, Martin Luther's morning and evening prayers, the Three Creeds, the Small Catechism, and more. Additionally, we offer baptism, confirmation, and marriage certificates. Stock up now for the new school year and ensure your learning environment is distinctively Lutheran with these quality products. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.